Well, that'll get us started. I'm going to share some things this morning that some of you will find offensive. I'm not sharing them for shock value or for provocation. I'm sharing them because they're part of the public discourse, part of an offensive, ugly war waged by people who I've come to suspect must be willfully ignorant and hateful. They have been on the offensive for years, for decades, and it's time, I think, to change our approach from trying to defend ourselves against their awful attacks to sharing the truth about who we are. LGBTQ plus people and our friends and our allies, those of us who others consider queer, I think it's time that we get out there and lead with our understanding of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Here is something some of you might have heard in the media over the last couple of weeks. Last week, Tucker Carlson released an interview with Chaya Rachik, who is the creator of Libs of TikTok. Here is how that interview ended. Rachel, the LGBTQ community has become this cult, and it's so captivating, and it pulls people in so strongly, unlike anything we've ever seen. They brainwash people to join, and they convince them of all these things, and it's really, really hard to get out of it. It's extremely poisonous. So you would think that maybe Tucker Carlson would say something like, well, you're painting a lot of people with a really broad brush here. Maybe you want to back out of that a little bit, but he didn't. Instead, he asked a follow-up question. He asked whether Rachik believed that there was a spiritual component to this queer issue. After some initial hesitation, Rachik ventured this theory. I think they're evil. Sometimes we try to break it down a lot, and you know, we discuss why this is happening. I think, she said, sometimes the simplest answer is they're just evil. They're bad people. They're just evil people, and they want to groom kids. Carlson's response, yeah. We cannot let that kind of hate stand as the definitive voice. This sermon series, Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, was inspired in part by a short poem by Marianne Williamson. I think I've got it up here, Marlon. Hate has talked so loudly for so long. Greed has talked so loudly for so long. Liars have talked so loudly for so long. Love has got to stop whispering. So I was talking with a couple of you about this sermon series, and one of you said that you feel like the most wide-reaching issue in our world right now is a general lack of doing anything, and that we as a nation have sort of come to this point of rewarding silence or encouraging people to go with the flow. We are very often taught not to rock the boat, and that there are certain things that you don't talk about in polite company. You don't talk about religion. You don't talk about politics. You're just supposed to be patient and wait it out. And then this sometimes becomes more malignant in a way, because we are told that most people are good, and that's complex, but I believe that. We're told that things will work themselves out. We're told that God has a plan and good will win in the end. I believe all of that. But, my friend said, remember that person sitting on the roof turning away the boat. Now, for those of you that don't know that story, a fellow was stuck on his rooftop in a flood, and he was praying to God to help. Soon, a man in a rowboat came by and shouted to the man on the roof, jump in, I can save you. And the fellow stranded on the roof said, no, it's okay. I'm praying to God, and he's going to save me. So the rowboat went on. And then a motorboat came by and shouted up to the guy, jump in, I can save you. No thanks, he said, I'm praying to God, and God is going to save me. I have faith. So the motorboat went on. And then a helicopter came, and the pilot shouted down, grab this rope, and I'll lift you up to safety. The stranded man said, no thanks, I'm praying to God, and God's going to save me. I have faith. So the helicopter flew away. Soon the water rose over the rooftop, drowned the man. He went to heaven. He finally got his chance to discuss the whole situation with God, at which point he exclaimed, I had faith in you, but you didn't save me. You let me drown. I don't understand why. And you know what God said. I sent you a rowboat and a motorboat and a helicopter. What did you expect? The point, my friend reminded me, is God's plan usually requires people to enact it. So during this series, we're taking on some of those big conversations that I think it's time for us to stop whispering about and let love speak louder than the other voices. So here's where we get to work. Many of you have heard that homosexuality is an abomination. I think we use that word, especially with kids, because a big word like that's got to be big time bad, right? So, abomination. Here are a few of the things that our Bible tells us are abominations. Unclean things in Leviticus. Customs of pagans in Leviticus. Idols. A proud look. A lying tongue, a sower of discord, a false balance or scale, abomination. The proud of heart, abomination. Condemning the just, abomination. Diverse, dishonest measures. And, because I always am honest with you, some same-sex acts. Wearing clothes of the opposite sex, eating unclean things, lending money with interest to a brother. All abominations. So I want to get back to that one. Some same-sex activity. Not same-sex orientation, but some same-sex activity. You know, we take things and we distort them all. Over time. So many of you know by now that the Bible does not say money is the root of all evil, right? But the desire, the love of money above all else is the root of all kinds of evil. So the Bible does not tell us that same-sex attraction or orientation is an abomination. It tells us the things that we understand are wrong, are an abomination. Sex with a person who is under the age of reasonable thought, someone who is under the age of giving consent. Rape is an abomination. And in the ancient times, ritual prostitution in the temple, all abominations. And you know, most of us who grew up in the church or who have heard from the Bible lovers is we've heard this story from the book of Genesis about Lot and his visitors, and we're told that story teaches us that same-sex activity, especially between men, is an abomination. So we're going to look at that story this morning. From Genesis, the 19th chapter, two angels came to Sodom, the name of the town, in the evening. And Lot was sitting in the gateway of Sodom. And when Lot saw the visitors, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. And he said, "Please, my lords, turn aside to my house and spend the night and wash your feet, and you can rise early and go on your way." And they said, "No, we'll spend the night in the town square." But Lot urged them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he made them a feast, and they ate. But before they lay down, the men of the city, listen closely, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man. So either women aren't people or the women were there too. I'm not sure. All the people to the last man surrounded the house, and they called to Lot, "Where are the men that came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we may know them." Imagine if early Bible translators had said, "Bring them out so we can get to know them too. Introduce your visitors." But we do have a biblical history and a traditional history of no meaning sexual activity. So some of our translations, like the NIV, even says, "Bring them out so that we can have sex with them." Lot went out to the men at the entrance after they said this, shut the door after him, and said, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly." This is the part we mumble. "Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring my two daughters out to you and do to them as you please." "Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof. They're my guest." But the people said, "Stand back. Stand back." And they pressed hard against Lot and drew near to break the door down. But the two visitors, maybe angels, reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out, groping for the door. There are many problems with reading this passage as an indictment of homosexuality. All that argument hinges on the word "no," which various modern translations have translated as sexual relations. But for those who would interpret it that way, for those who would say the sin of homosexuality was so horrible that God destroyed a whole city, they cannot make that statement without leaving out those troublesome words. A father saying, "I think homosexuality is such an abomination that rather than having you rape these two men, I am going to send my daughters out. Do to them as you will." There is no defense for that. There is no interpretation for that. There is no revelation in that. It does not match. The sin of sodomy was not homosexuality. In fact, in the book of Ezekiel, we are told in the 16th chapter specifically, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, excess of food, and prosperous ease, but did not aid the poor and needy. They were selfish. They were inhospitable. They were haughty and did abominable things before God. Therefore, I removed them when I saw it. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? The sin of Sodom was not homosexuality. And I'm not going to go deeper into that. But the sin of Sodom was arrogance. They had abundance and they did not share with the poor and needy. They were not hospitable to the strangers. One of the articles that I read, and I'm going to put the information about this article in this week's news and notes, so those of you who want to read more deeply can. But I want to let you know that the word sodomy doesn't even appear in discourse, in writing, in anything, the word sodomy, until the year 538. 500 years after Jesus' teaching and Jesus' life on earth, the Emperor Justinian put out this manifesto, and in it, he declared, 500 years after Jesus, in it, he declared that Sodom's sin had been specifically same-sex activities and the desire for them. Skipped over all that part about, let me send my daughters out to you. Not until 538. And then we worked with that, and we translated the translation of the translation, and the word homosexual or homosexuality didn't appear in our English translations of the Bible until about 1947. It took almost 2,000 years of us interpreting, reinterpreting, and misinterpreting Jesus' teachings about love and all of it to get homosexuality into the Bible. It wasn't even there. Because same-sex attraction is not a sin. Same-sex orientation is not a sin. We could talk about this forever, but I just wanted to give you a few things. When people start talking to you about, well, in Genesis and Lot, and you have some pretty strong replies for them. I want to move us forward, though. Here's what I chose as our scripture for today from the book of Acts, the 10th chapter, starting with verse 34. Peter began to speak to the people. I truly understand that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears God and does what is right is acceptable to God. You know the message that God sent to the people of Israel, preaching peace by Jesus Christ, who is Lord of all. The message spread throughout Judea, beginning in Galilee after the baptism that John announced, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and with power, how he went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. We are witnesses to all that he did, both in Judea and in Jerusalem. They put him to death by hanging him on a tree, but God raised him on the third day and allowed him to appear, not to all the people, but to us who were chosen by God as witnesses and who ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead. He commanded us to preach to the people and to testify that he is the one ordained by God as judge of the living and the dead. All the prophets testify about him, that every one who believes in him receives forgiveness of sins through his name. Back at the beginning of that, I truly understand that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears God and does what is right is acceptable to God. Pretty straightforward. God commanded us to preach to the people and to testify, or Christ commanded us to preach to the people and to testify that he is the one ordained as judge of the living and the dead. All the prophets testify about him, that everyone who believes in him receives forgiveness of sins through his name. You carry the truth in you. Do not be a victim of the hateful onslaughts just because you think that meekness is what is required from you. That's four more sermons. But do not be a victim to that hatred because you think you are supposed to be weak. Do not confront or put yourself in danger. That's not what I'm asking you to do. But have you heard this little aphorism, this little piece of wisdom? Do not accept criticism from someone you would not go to for advice. Some of these hateful prophets, Christians, don't accept their criticism if they're not someone you would seek out for advice. I want to end this morning by telling you a story. I've experienced my own evolution through all this. For a long time, I refused to debate anyone about homosexuality, about sin, about the stories in Genesis, about Jesus' words. I refused to debate. I was thinking, you know, I'll let my life speak. People will find out that I'm a decent person and that I'm just like they are, and then they'll figure out that I'm gay and A plus B equals C and A equals C and all that. And I think that was the right approach because it was the one I was able to make. But that's changed. While I was in seminary, I met a woman who was very clear that in her view, homosexuality was not compatible with Christianity, and that I had no business in a Christian seminary, much less trying to become ordained in her Presbyterian church. As was my way then, I didn't argue with her, even though I always felt like she was way too invested in my eternal soul. But what I did do was step into her path. Whenever I had a chance, step into her path, sit at her lunch table, walk between classes with her, talk. I figured if we could just get to know each other, she might find out that I was not, in fact, an abomination. But there was no change. One day before Christmas break, I stood with her near the front desk and asked about her Christmas plans and told her about mine, about how excited I was for our two oldest children to be home. Asked about her children. She had one, a son. He was not coming home. He was not welcome, neither he nor his boyfriend. At that moment, I could not have been angrier with her. Couldn't have had less respect for her. Couldn't have wanted less to be standing there talking with her. But I did. How can you be so sure, I asked her, that you are right, that your son and I are sinners? Scripture, she said. Teaching. I was crying a little by then, not for myself so much, because I was used to it, especially from the church. But I was crying for her son and for her. Can I ask you for something? I said. You're not going to change my mind, she said. Nothing can change my mind. No, I know. I'm not going to try to change your mind. I'm asking you to pray for me. I always pray for you. pray for me, I said, but not that God will change me. Pray that God will show me the truth. Certainly, she said, and she walked away. I don't have a happy ending to tell you about this story. I continued to step into her path, but she left seminary soon after, and we didn't stay in touch. But here's the one thing I will always be grateful for. She taught me what to say to the Christian hardliners. Pray that God will show me the truth. So see, she was invited to pray for me, and that addressed her Christian obligation. But I asked her to pray that God would show me the truth, not that God would change me. She had to decide if she believed in God or not. I encourage you to ask those who persecute you for Christ's name's sake, or who condemn or hate the LGBTQ community of which you are an ally. Encourage those people to pray for you. To pray that God will show you the truth. That God will show you the way. And then do the same for them. This sermon series is about the tough topics and about not just being people who sit back and don't rock the boat, but people who will take out the positive news of God's love for everyone. So in these next couple of minutes, while Casey just strums her guitar for us, will you think about that? How might you enter this conversation, maybe in a new way? Definitely in a safe way. Who do you need to invite to pray for you that God shows you the truth? And after you do that, check in with them occasionally. Well, I feel like God is showing me the truth. I feel peace. I feel an understanding of God's love for me. What are you feeling? Think about those things.